Chapter 17. All that talk about boarding and now the goddamn flight is delayed. For what? They never tell you right away, do they? No, they just put the dreaded D word up there on the announcement board and expect you to guess why. Let's see, Marcia fumes. What could it be this time? The arriving crew who dilly-dallies around just to exceed their union turnaround times from last night's flight? Pothead mechanics imagining all sorts of non-existent issues so they can be heroes when they fix the problem? Caterers with hepatitis C forgetting to put in those hard, cold, unspreadable packets of butter? Weather, as they so irritatingly put it. Don't they mean bad weather? There's always weather, isn't there, ignoramuses? Fog? So what? Pilots can see in the pitch blackness of night, can't they? What's a little gray? Wind? We're about to fly on the wind, aren't we? Drunk air traffic controllers? There's a real problem that's never brought up. And suicidal pilots? Remember that flight from Barcelona to Dusseldorf? It could happen to any of us. Yet what do they give us as we wait, terrified to board, imagining the thousands of things that could go wrong on every flight due to subhuman error? Not a friggin' thing. Don't they have any crackers, for Christ's sake? Marcia's starving. Oh, what'd she do for even a Triscuit? Finally, it's a go, with no explanation for the delay, not a peep, just the usual boarding order, which always drives Marcia insane. First, customers with disabilities, fakers, active members of the military, post-traumatic stress time bombs, United Global Services, jet-lagged travelers with air rage issues, families with children under two, nutcase Catholics, premier 1K members, frequent flyer scammers, first class, freeloaders who never actually pay for their own ticket, premier platinum members, heroin dealers, premier gold members, their drug mules, premier silver, uppity coach impersonating business class, United Explorer card members, suckers who fell for that onboard credit card pitch on past flights. And then finally, Marcia Sprinkle. She darts over to the nearby next gate on the way to the jetway and switches her pink down coat for a black leather jacket lying on a seat some hag isn't watching as she blabs on her phone. It fits. Good. A new outfit is always necessary when boarding. And yes, once again, she will suffer the indignity of coach due to the number of passengers and theft possibilities. Marcia smiles after exiting the jetway onto the plane, but the flight attendant's rosy expression fades as soon as she sees a group three on her boarding pass. She'll regret that. Pretending to trip over another passenger's bag in the aisle, Marcia purposely creates a commotion in the front of the plane, dropping the old lady's stolen purse unzipped so the hankies, mints, and other crap spill out in the aisle. Oh, I'm so sorry, Marcia sputters as the flight attendant gets down on her knees to help retrieve the items, and other Group 3 boarders behind her join in the rescue effort. Marcia reaches above and swipes the "what else could you call a woman this easily fooled?" the stewardess's pocketbook right out of that first little overhead bin where you get on the plane, the same place where they always keep their valuables. Marcia thanks all her helpers profusely and continues to walk through first class back to her seat in Siberia, ditching the first stolen bag in another compartment. Look at these privileged bastards calmly scrolling through their overpriced phones, not even realizing they're being spied on this very moment, and their porno searches and credit card information are being forwarded to Russian hackers for blackmail or identity theft. What's that fucker looking at? That guy wearing some sort of dog catcher uniform with a patch sewn on his top right pocket showing a muzzle in a circle with a line drawn through it like a no-smoking warning. To top off her confusion, he's daring to make eye contact without permission. Worse yet, he's smiling. And good Lord, he's missing one of his front teeth. Is there no end to the humiliation of today's air travel? Suddenly, she's paranoid. Did he see her steal the cabin attendant's pocketbook? As she passes his aisle seat, refusing to acknowledge his grin, yes, that's the only way to describe his lewd look, she waits for him to blink. A blink is all the time she needs to grab his little bag overhead in the bin he purposely left open to kindly signal other first-class passengers there's still room. That's what he gets for being a luggage liberal. Okay, row 17, seat F. Aisle, of course. First aisle if you have to tackle some lunatic passenger who tries to open the emergency exit door mid-flight, or smack the traveler in front of you who reclines the seat without warning right in the middle of that bad, edited-for-airlines Hollywood movie you'd never see at home, even if it was playing down the street and they let you in for free. Of course, there are two people already in her row. Roly-poly types. Marcia saw them get on board with other passengers claiming they needed extra help in boarding. Wouldn't you know it? The woman, the stouter of the two, is in the middle seat, and you can tell she wants to talk. "Oh, I know," she bellows. "I'd hate to sit next to me, too. I'm a biggin. I'm Myrtle, and this is my husband, Gus Gus, better known where we live as Lord of the Onion Rings." "Hello," Marcia manages to respond, her voice dripping icicles, hoping they get the hint that chatter is not an option in row 17. "I could eat a horse," Gus Gus shouts out, completely unaware of Marcia's need for aural space. She ignores his outburst as she cranes her neck to see if that arrogant dog catcher is still spying on her. He is, standing in the aisle, peering back her way, with that same audacious gap-tooth come-hither grin. Ha! Wait till he goes to get his dog bite serum or whatever he keeps in that now-missing kit of his. That'll show him. "You'd think we'd get food on this flight like they used to serve," Myrtle gripes to anybody who will listen. "But no. Now if it's under a 2-hour flight, we gotta fast," her husband complains. "I'm starving to death," Myrtle bellows out to Marcia, who ignores her outburst. "They could give you a sandwich, at least," Gus Gus yells. "Or one stinking bag of pretzels to tide us over," Myrtle reasons to Marcia, who still has shown no signs of even hearing the conversation. Marcia is trapped. The flight is now full, and there's nowhere to move to, even if that were allowed. "We got to bring our own food from home on board," Myrtle whispers to Marcia, who is shoving both of her newly stolen bags under her seat. But Myrtle doesn't even notice because she is struggling herself to retrieve a small plastic container of macaroni from underneath her skirt. "Airport food is just too expensive," volunteers Gus Gus. "Does United Airlines think we're made of money?" "Those security cretins always try to seize our onboard snacks, but who's going to want to search up here?" asks Myrtle as she retrieves another container, this one packed with egg salad, from up inside her nether regions. "Want some?" she blithely asks Marcia as she opens the Tupperware container. "No," sputters Marcia, instantly regretting joining in the conversation, no matter how minimally. Uh-oh. That dog catcher, or whatever he is now standing up searching the overhead bin for his bag. "Please, God, or whatever lower power can hear me, make this plane take off." Presto, the announcement comes on that the airplane doors are now closed, and you must take your seat and fasten your seatbelt. See, nobody can ever accuse Marcia of not being spiritual. Do these people next to her ever shut up, Marcia wonders? No, even as the plane taxis down the runway, Myrtle is still yakking, only louder to be heard over the roaring jet engines. "We love cheese the best," she pontificates as they rise in the air through a few bumps of turbulence. Once they reach cruising altitude, Myrtle takes a large cheddar wheel out of her hand luggage. The airport X-ray scanners always think it's my hat, she whispers conspiratorially to Marcia, as if she's revealing state secrets. The circular round is covered in lint, and parts show mold, but that doesn't seem to bother these two. Myrtle whips out a baggie filled with crackers from inside her industrial-strength bra, and she and Gus Gus start making hors d'oeuvres. Marcia's eyes light up. Crackers. Now we're talking the same language. Not her brand, but at least they're not Cheez-Its. "We love Keebler's best," bellows Gus Gus, sounding like anything other than Cinderella's mouse friend. "No, I love Ritz better," argues Myrtle. "They're more highly processed." "Give me one," blurts Marcia, grabbing the bag out of Myrtle's hand. "Sure, sure, help yourself," she stammers, delighted to find common food ground with a fellow passenger. Chewing slowly, Marcia feels the grams of fiber mixing with a hint of grain. Mmm, a smidgen of sodium. all going down the conveyor belt of her digestive system with the speed of nourishment, the joy of gastronomical simplicity. A cracker is not a snack. It's the ultimate meal that energizes her psyche, a nutrition that produces very little waste. The only solid that Marsha's highly selective anus rejects is organic. Some call it the truth.